whether saved or unsaved. It's something that ought to leave a lasting impression upon our hearts and minds and lives. A parable, of course, is simply a very simple metaphor, a simile, if you will, conveyed in story form. A parable is first and foremost is a comparison. It is a literary form with a very specific purpose that makes an analogy through a word picture or a story. Now, the reason that Jesus spoke this parable is stated in verse 2. And the Pharisees and scribes murmured, saying, "This man," referring to Jesus, "receiveth sinners and eateth with them." The purpose of the parable is to rebuke the Pharisees and scribes for murmuring and complaining and being critical of the fact that Jesus Christ receives sinners. That is the purpose of the parable. There are different ways that you can approach this parable. There are different applications of the parable. But the central message is the fact that there is great joy in heaven over the return of the lost, the lesson being that there ought to be rejoicing over the fact that Jesus receives sinners. If you cannot rejoice over that, then that puts you in verse 2. And this parable is rebuke to that attitude. Now, in the parable, the sinner is mirrored in the younger son, known as the prodigal. And the Pharisees and scribes are mirrored in the behavior of the eldest son when his father received his brother. And Jesus Christ is mirrored in the father receiving his son. Again, this man receiveth sinners. Now, in the parable, Jesus is pointing out the stark contrast between God's own delight in the restoration of sinners and the Pharisees' inflexible hostility toward those same sinners. Again, the parable has more than one application. And there are lessons for both the saved and the unsaved. For example, the parable paints a picture of the Lord saving lost sinners. You can see that picture in the parable. It is also a picture of a backslidden child of God and the restoration and healing that the Lord can bring about, causing the backslidden one to return to the Lord. That also is seen in the parable. It also illustrates the seriousness and the danger of sin. That is seen very clearly in the parable. And it is also an illustration of true repentance and the love and grace of God in forgiving the repentant. And it is also a rebuke, and this is the main reason for the parable. It is a rebuke of the attitude of self-righteousness which we find in the elder son. So it is known as the parable of the prodigal son. But it could just as easily be titled the parable of the self-righteous brother, the elder son. And it can just as easily be titled the parable of the forgiving father. So there are many applications, but looking at the parable as a whole, you see three parables, or one parable with three parts, and that's what I believe it is. It's one parable with three parts. It's no big deal if you see it the other way. But all three regard something that is lost. That is something no longer available and of use to its owner. It's lost. And however you look at it, Jesus places greater and greater emphasis upon the value and the importance of the thing that is lost. In the illustration of the lost sheep, which is in the opening verses, most call it the parable of the lost sheep. There was one sheep out of 100 missing. 1% of something that is lost. It moves on to the so-called parable of the lost piece of silver. And in that parable, or in that part of the one parable, however you want to look at it, there is one coin missing out of 10, or 10% of something that is lost. But then you come to the parable of the lost son. One son out of two missing, or lost, or 50%. So you see, it increases in intensity. You move from 1% to 10% to 50%. Looking through the chapter, the objects that were lost increases in the importance of the parable. You see, in the first part, there was an animal missing. There was an animal that was lost, a sheep. In the second, you see, you have the material is missing, a coin. But in the third, you have a person. Quite a difference between a person and a sheep. A person, a human being, and a lost coin. So the intensity grows. And coming to verse 11, we hear Jesus say, a certain man had two sons. And then he proceeds to tell the story. A certain man had two sons. And with those words, Jesus introduces the main characters in this part. There is a father, a certain man, and there are two sons. The two sons are identified. In verse 12, the younger of them. And in verse 25, his elder son. That's how they're identified. They're not identified by name, but they're identified by age. One was younger, one was older. And then the story unfolds, and the focus shifts from one character to another. In verses 12 through 20, the younger son is the main focus. He is the main focus of the parable. But when you move over to verses 20 through 24, the father takes center stage. The focus is now upon the father. And then, of course, from verse 25 through 31, the elder son is the focus. So our message today is a story of two sons. Tonight, Lord willing, we'll preach on a story of a father. But today, a story of two sons. There was a younger son, and there was an elder son. And in these two sons, there are innumerable lessons. Whether you be unsaved or saved, the lessons are there. So first of all, let's look at this younger son. In the younger son, we have a very graphic picture of the nature of sin. It is a picture of the sinner away from God. In this younger son, we see that there are two distinct phases in his rebellion or in his sin. Phase number one, this is where it begins, is selfishness and greed. In verse 12, Jesus draws our attention to the youngest of these two sons. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falleth to me. This younger, there came a day when the younger son demanded his portion of the inheritance, which according to law at that time would have been one third. The elder son would receive two thirds. We in our society, it's usually split down the middle. But not so then. The elder would receive more than the younger. So, for a child to request his inheritance early is basically saying, Dad, you're in way of my plans. I want what belongs to me now. You are a barrier to the life that I'm living. Do not many of God's people say that to God? Oh, they may not say it directly, but they might as well. Lord, you are in the way of my plans. And that's true of every, that's true of every lost sinner. He is basically saying, I want out. Because, Dad, I have other plans. And Dad, I don't want to hurt your feelings, but those plans don't involve you. I want out. Again, that's the mindset of the unsaved individual. But it's also the mindset of the saved individual who's moving away from the Lord. Father, give me the portion of goods that falleth to me. All the disrespect in that request toward his father. And it serves as a warning to each one of us. That attitude did not just happen overnight. Somewhere along the line, that younger son became discontent and became dissatisfied in heart and mind with life with his father. He was tired of living that life. When a child of God becomes tired of serving the Lord, you're headed for destruction. This younger son became disgruntled with the ways of his father. All of those who are looking for loopholes, they might as well just come right out and say it, I am disgruntled with my father, I am not pleased, and I want another way. Now, no one's that honest. He was began to think that life would be better away from the father. Life would be better away from the father. Now, every lost person thinks this way. And many of God's people think this way. He's beginning to think that I might be missing something. There may be something really special out there. And I owe it to myself to at least investigate. Well, the Bible tells you pretty clearly what's out there. You don't need to go investigate. He began to feel the wooing and the cry of life away from his father. And all of this grew within him. And his heart and mind gradually became hardened. And one day in his selfishness and one day in his greed, he goes to his father with this shameful and shocking request, Father, give me the portion of goods that falleth to me. Give me, give me, give me. We need to hear those words. He has become the center of his world. Give me. He did not want his father to be involved in his everyday life. You're on a dangerous road when you begin to think, I do not want God involved in every day of my life. Isn't Sunday enough? Isn't Wednesday enough? He's got to be involved every single day. He ought to be. Oh, how ungrateful. God created you. God saved your soul. And you don't want Him to be involved every day in your life? And I'll go even further, in everything, every day of your life. So this, there's an attitude. And people say, well, I'm just thinking it. There's no danger in that. Oh, you fool. If you think it, you can do it. And you are on the way. Whether you realize it or not, you are on the way to doing it. Now, you may not, but you're on the way. So he did not want his father involved in his everyday life. This is true of the unsaved individual. Sadly, it's true of many of saved individuals. They want to breathe God's air. They want God's food. They want God's water. They want His time, His world, His goodness, and His blessings, but they do not want God. Oh, how ungrateful. Oh, the ingratitude. Then notice phase two of this. And this is told in verse 13. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and took his journey. Notice it does not say, and took a journey. Took his journey. Anytime you take your own journey, you're in trouble. And took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living. So this part of the story is told in verses 13 through 17 and culminates in the absolute meltdown of the younger son's life. His lusts proved to be out of control. He finds himself in a horrific bondage, the bondage of his own sin. And there is no greater bondage than the bondage of one's own sin. And the truth is, it turns out infinitely worse than what he thought his father's authority to be. He thought he had it so bad at his father's house. But this journey would be infinitely worse than however bad he thought it was at the father's house. And he's pulled progressively downward in sin's death spiral until he finds himself hopeless in the most appalling of circumstances. We read in verse 13 those sad words, the younger son gathered all together. Look at him. Just look at him. As he's packing his bags, if you will. He's gathering all things together. He's tired of life in his father's house. He's tired of those responsibilities. He's tired of accountability to his father. And he's thinking as he's packing his bags, I'm headed for a better life. And I can't tell you how many times we have seen people pack their bags, if you will, thinking I'm headed for a better life. Life is never better away from the Father. Never. Never. Gathers all together. Oh, he has all these plans. He has all these ideas. And oh, that somewhere along the line he would have stopped, but he didn't. There were many opportunities for him to do so, but he didn't. So he packs, he gathers all together, and then we read, and he took his journey. He took his journey. His journey was a quest for freedom. His journey was a longing for excitement. His journey was a greed for the base things of the world. It was a hunger for worldly success. But there is no true freedom. And there is no reason for excitement. And there is no success away from God. But he took his journey, thinking that he was about to improve his life. In his mind, he just knew things are going to get better. The very moment I step off my father's property, things are going to get better for me. He just knew that. But he was sadly mistaken. It's never better away from God. How many times young people have said, I've lived all my life under mom and dad's rules, and I'm going to get out, and I'm going to get out now. And what happens? Many times, a life is ruined. It's never better to leave God. I don't care how well you've thought it out. It's never better. It's never better for you. It's never better for your family. In his father's presence, he had everything he ever needed. At home with his father, there was plenty. At home with his father, there was sufficient supply. At home with his father, there was the reality of his father's presence. When he got up in the morning, the father was there. When he worked out in the fields during the day, there was the father. No matter what a day brought forth, he could see his father. And he could experience his father's love and his care. At home with his father, he was always under the influence of his father's instruction and guidance. And there was protection in his life. But he took his journey. He took his journey. And in doing so, he has now left the place of blessing. And as you see him heading off, and you can only imagine the father as he sees the back of his son until eventually he can't see him anymore. Oh, what sadness to see someone turn their back on God and head on their journey. So he's now left the place of blessing. As you watch him walk away and get further and further and further away, he doesn't know it. But he's on the road to ruin. He's on the road to ruin. Back there is his loving, caring, and rich father. And he's walking away. He takes his journey. As he does so, he's filled with self-gratitude. He's filled with self. He's filled with ingratitude. There is defiance in his heart, and he's looking for pleasure away from his father. You won't find pleasure away from God. Nothing good can come of this journey. Nothing good. Oh, that somewhere before he got too far away, he would have stopped and returned. Just think, he gets like 400 or 500 yards away. What would have happened if when he got 400 or 500 yards away, he said, you know what, I'm going to go back. He wouldn't have ruined his life. Wherever you are, you better. If you're going away from the Father, you better stop. You better stop right now. Because each step you take, it's going to get worse. People seem to think, well, it can't get any worse than this. Oh, yes, it can. And it will continually get worse. Each step you take away from the Father. Each step took him that much further from his Father's presence. And we read he took his journey into a far country. into a far country. Far country. He's now away from the Father. The first morning he gets up, he does not see his Father. The first day he spends, he does not see his Father. The first day he spends, he does not ever sit at the Father's table. He takes his journey into a far country. Each step took him further from what was right. Took him further from what was in his best interest. And things would get progressively worse. You notice, beginning with verse 13, reading down through verse 17 or verse 16, you have repeatedly, and. In other words, things just progressed. Not as he had planned, but things just got worse and worse and worse. And as they got worse, back there is his Father. All he had to do was turn around and head back. So one thing would lead to another. Oh, that he would have stopped. Oh, that he would have stopped. But look at him. His heart is filled with self. By this time, he has no regard for his Father. And he wanders further and further away. And now, by his own actions, they are not the actions of anyone else. No one made him take this journey. Perhaps his elder brother called him a bad name one day, so he decided, oh, I'm gonna leave. That's not the reason you left. His own actions. By his own actions, he is separated from his Father. And there is a very wide gulf now between himself and his Father. And that wide gulf is sin and his pride and ignorance. Oh, he could have stopped. But once sin and pride and ignorance takes control, you're headed on a long journey. The journey led to a life of waste. He took his journey into a far country, and there, he couldn't waste his substance back at his Father's house. He couldn't waste his life. He couldn't ruin his life back there. You, in order to do that, you've got to get away from the Father. You will not ruin your life serving God. You will not ruin your life staying close to God. You will ruin your life when you take a journey from the Father's house. And there, he wasted, he squandered his inheritance. What was bestowed, he took what the Father had bestowed upon him, and he threw it all away. And we've all known people who have thrown it all away. They've thrown away their life. Because one day they decided life is better out there than back with the Father. And they throw it all away. And then they want to blame someone else. They want to blame the church. They want to blame mom and dad. They want to blame grandma and grandpa. They're going to find somebody to blame, and some idiot will come and pat them on the back and say, oh, you're so right, you've been abused. And all you've done is lengthen their stay in the far country. That's all you've done. We threw it all away. Again, he could not live a life of waste in the Father's house. He had to depart in order to waste his life. Do not be deceived. away from the Father in the far country is a life of wasted years. There is a life of wasted privileges. There is a life of wasted opportunities and blessings. Don't throw it away. He now finds himself in a state of deterioration. Notice this journey led to a life of a different lifestyle. He took his journey into the far country and there wasted his substance with riotous living. He couldn't live that way in the Father's house. He had to get to the far country to live that way. The word riotous simply means unruly, lawlessly, disorderly, out of control. He's out of control. You say, well, somebody needs to go talk to him. And you go talk to him. You go sit down with him. He's out of control. What are you going to do? You're going to try to reason with an unreasonable person. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. They're gone. Oh, they can come back. But it won't be human reasoning that brings them back. So he's in a different lifestyle. It is brought out in verse 30 that he devoured, that is, the Father's blessings, the inheritance, with harlots. So now in the far country, he's living a life of immorality. He's living a life of filth and wickedness and rebellion. He's seeking to gratify every whim and desire of his flesh. He's living a life of waste. Again, he had to leave the Father to do this. So we see him in the far country, living a life that is contrary to and in direct opposition and defiance of his Father's instruction and guidance. Again, apply that to the Lord. Living a life with total disregard and total disrespect of his Father. But all the while, back there, is a loving, caring Father waiting to receive him. And that's true of you and I. We can get in the far country. Back there is a loving God waiting to receive us. The journey led to a life of poverty. Verse 14 says, and when he had spent all, when he left his Father's house, he gathered all together. He had an abundance. But now we see he spent all. So look at him. He has nothing. He has nothing. He had received one third of his Father's riches. And now he has nothing. Sin has robbed him. And he's miles and miles away from a Father who loved him. The journey from God will strip you and leave you with nothing. Nothing. But back there, there's an abundance of all good things. There's a loving and caring Father waiting to receive him. The journey took him into a famine, verse 14, and when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land. That land. Not back at the Father's house. There wasn't a famine there. There's never a famine close to God. You get away from God, you'll experience a famine. Notice that the famine was mighty. That is, it was immense. And he has nothing. After he spent all, then the famine arose. That's the way it goes. People get away from God, call it bad luck. There is no such thing. He has nothing. And now he finds himself in a very demanding circumstance. And he does not have the means to meet that circumstance. Again, notice the phrase, that land. The famine was in the far country. The far country is overtaken in the famine. It's a dry and barren country with nothing to satisfy the deepest and most important needs. And that's true of the world. The world is a far country. The journey brought him to a place of desperation. Let me tell you something. If you decide that one day you're just going to leave God, you'd better hope and pray that God brings you to a point of desperation. Because that's the only way you're coming back. It's the only way. Because of stubbornness. Verse 14, as a result of the fact that he had spent all, and the result of the fact that there was a famine, he began to be in want. He began to feel a need. There was an absence of everything that he needed. Now he finds himself in a state of desperation. But back there, there's plenty. Back there, there's comfort. There's rest. There's happiness. There's a loving, caring father waiting to receive him. The journey brought him bondage. Away from his father, out of fellowship with his father. With desperation and anguish filling his soul. Notice where he turns. Verse 15. And he joined himself with a citizen of that country. All the foolishness of sin. Back there is a loving, caring father waiting to receive him. And when desperation fills his heart, who does he turn to? He turns to a citizen of that country. Oh, the insanity of sin. He joins himself to one who belonged to and lived in a land of harlots, in waste, in poverty, in famine. But back there is everything he needs. But he joins himself to a citizen of the far country. And here's how that goes. Oh, they love me. They love me like no one ever has loved me. Oh, you fool. You don't know what love is. You left it when you left the Father's house. And now you're deceived about what love is. Oh, these people of far country, they love me. They care for me. Yeah, stick around the far country a while and you'll find out different. The journey brought him to a place of no help and no relief. Notice verse 16. And he would fain have filled his belly with the husk that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. No man gave unto him. They didn't have what he needed. Back in his father's house, there he is sitting in the hog pen. Back at his father's house is the father's table. And there's a banquet of the finest food every single day. Now, look at him now. He's sitting in the hog pen. Thank God the story doesn't end there. What a terribly sad story it would be if it ended with this young man in the hog pen. But we read in verse 17, he came to himself. What that means is he began to think of back there. Verse 18, he began to long for life in the Father's house. Verse 19, he began to feel the guilt and the shame of his sin. And in verse 20, he begins his journey again, this time in the right direction, toward his Father. Yes, this man receiveth sinners. Wherever you are today, saved or unsaved, wherever you are, might be in your spiritual condition as a child of God, know this, this man receiveth sinners. The second part of the story, and we'll hurry, is the elder son. We read of him in verses 25 and through verse 31. He epitomizes the Pharisees and scribes that Jesus is rebuking for the reaction toward him receiving sinners. You see, this elder son, he's really the main character. He's the point of rebuke. He's not often looked at. And that's a ploy of Satan. But this elder son, he never physically left his father's house. He never outwardly spent his substance in riotous living. He never wasted his substance with harlots. He never physically spent time in the hog pen. And though he never outwardly joined himself to the world, he was in terrible, terrible shape. And the point of the and that is the point of the rebuke of the parable. His behavior and spirit is a very vivid depiction of the seemingly honorable and superficially moral an outwardly religious Pharisee. He illustrates the haughtiness of the Pharisee. He illustrates the hatefulness of the Pharisees. He appears to be outwardly responsible, faithful, and committed to the Father. But that's appearance only. For he has a wrong attitude. And he has a wrong spirit. And though even though he never went physically into the far country, we need to be mindful that there's more than one way of going into the far country. There's more than one way of sitting in the hog pen. You don't have to leave the Father's house to do that. You leave the Father's house, you will be there. But you don't have to leave to be guilty. Because the emphasis is almost entirely upon the younger son, a great danger has been overlooked and ignored. When that servant said to the elder son, Thy brother is come. That servant thought he was telling the elder son some wonderful news, something that would thrill his soul. Thy father hath received him safe and sound. Thy brother is safe and sound. And your father has received him. You would think that is wonderful news. But it wasn't to this elder son, because he had the same attitude as the Pharisees. He could not understand why would his father receive him back. When you get to that place, you're in sad shape. You see, you're offended. Just like the Pharisees, this man receiveth sinners. And the elder son would go on and say, I have been faithful to you, and you never did this for me. His focus is himself. And just like the Pharisees and scribes, he could not find it in himself to rejoice that his brother, and he never once referred to him as his brother, that is the elder son. He said him. He He wouldn't even refer to him as a brother. Anytime a child of God leaves the Lord, in time they come back. And may I say, they do not come back the same way they left. They come back. If that doesn't cause rejoicing, something's wrong with us. It ought to be a reminder that this man receiveth sinners. For you and I that are saved, that we would not mirror either one of these two sons. That we would not be like the younger son, who thinks that life is going to be better away from God. You know, I don't even go there in my mind, or if I do, I stop it immediately. Someone will say, well, what would you have done if you weren't a preacher? I don't know. But I'm not going to start thinking that way. Oh, what life could have been. That's dangerous. What would have happened if I weren't raised in a Christian home? Oh, what would my life be like? You better not go there. Because in your deceitful heart, you might begin to think, you know what? Life would have been better. No, it wouldn't have. I don't care how many trials you've had as a child of God, life would have been worse away from Him. Oh, that we would stay close to the Father. That we wouldn't be like this younger son. That we would enjoy always the Father. That we would experience the Father every day. And that we would have a right attitude toward Him. You see, the elder son had a wrong attitude not only toward his brother, had a wrong attitude toward his father. He never left, but he had a wrong attitude. That's true of a lot of people. They stay in a church all their life, and they're referred to as faithful, but if you really begin to take a look, they're just like this elder son. Far from faithful. Oh, that we wouldn't be either one of these sons. But if you take that journey, and we all have, some to greater degrees than others, no doubt, you ought to pray every day, Lord, if I begin to take that journey, stop me. Stop me. There needs to be a prayer every day. I've prayed that every day for years and years and years and years. I'm not bragging. Lord, if I start in that journey, stop me. And you know how he stops most of the time? Dan, that's all he has to do. You don't have to be whipped. You ignore, and I guarantee you, as you take that journey away from the Father taps you on the shoulder saying, son, daughter, turn around. Turn around. And oh, if you would only turn right then. But you keep going. And eventually, you're going to get to a place where you have nothing. Now, how many people say, well, it's all working out. I imagine it did for all the time that the son was spending his inheritance. He thought, man, this is great. This is great. I'm doing what I want to do. I'm happy. But there came a day. He had nothing. And oh, how many times people have told me it's working out so well. Just wait. Just wait. It's going to end. You're coming to a, you're getting closer and closer to the hog pen. Who in the world wants to live in the hog pen when back there is the Father's table? God help us not to wander from God. God help us to, when those do wander or when we ourselves wander, that we always realize this man receiveth sinners. There's hope. There's hope as long as that individual has breath. There's hope that one day they come back to the Lord. May we never get angry with the Lord receiving a sinner. Whether it be a saved sinner or a lost sinner, doesn't matter. May that never, ever offend us. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse song.